America leads the world in medicine development. It matters. We get new medicines first, nearly 3 years faster. 5 million Americans go to work because we make medicines here at home. And not relying on other countries keeps us safe. But China is racing to overtake us. Will we let them, or will we choose to stay ahead? When America leads, America cures. Let's tell Washington to keep us in the lead.
Learn how at americacures.com. Paid for by Pharma.
Welcome back, everybody. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live, presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri. We are back. We are ready. My Yankees are down, but we're not out. Boxing world is still alive. Chris is on his way to Ireland. Things are happening. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. I'm not packed for my international flight that's in a couple hours, which is, you know, par for the course for me.
Are you a late packer, early packer?
I'm a late packer. I'm a late show up to the airport. So I was talking to Paulie about this, and there's two distinct personality types. There's the guy who's 2 hours before, doesn't want to rush, wants to be calm on travel day, wants to be ready, everything prepared.
Usually a good dad.
And then there's like the sociopath who literally doesn't want to wait on a single line at any point and wants to like arrive as the plane's about to take off. I am the latter.
Do you have TSA? Do you have clear?
Yeah, of course. I have everything.
Yeah.
Clearly, literally, for Fort Lauderdale, I arrive at boarding, like at the airport, like not even through security. Like I step onto the curb at boarding. That's my time.
It's a game, and you don't want to get there too. There's nothing worse than getting there like an hour early. And
you're I know people who do that on purpose. Like they like to do that.
Yeah, that's rough. So going to Belfast for Pro Box, that should be pretty cool.
Belfast and Waterford. Weekend. Any listeners that are in the area, if they want to say what's up, come say what's up. Also, DM me, please, and send me some cool things to check out, whether it's sites to see, restaurants to eat at, or bars to drink at. I'm the game.
Were you going to be with the Conlins?
Yeah.
Yep. They pretty much run Belfast, so I think you're set in terms of where to drink and where to go.
I mean, but I told Mick, I was like, hey, man, I know you're training. Like, you know, I'm not going to be drinking with you, but I'll be drinking with your brother.
Jamie Conlin. Those are good dudes. Those are good dudes. Let's get into it. This past weekend was pretty much a light weekend. We had this Catterall Pro Gray dust up. Afternoon dust up, which, you know, wasn't the biggest fight. It had some title ramifications that I feel like Eddie Hearn, who promotes Jack Catterall, kind of drummed up on his own. They were calling it like a de facto title eliminator to get a little more interest in a fight that we told you beforehand that was not going to look that great. And it didn't look that fun or it didn't look that exciting for the first four rounds. You know, they were fighting a mile apart. They were not closing the distance. Pro Gray's short arms, no legs. Catterall is not the most engaging fighters. We had two southpaws that are counterpunchers staring at each other for four or five rounds. And round five comes around, and there's that punch on the shoulder that could have been a slip. Down goes Catterall, and that kind of wakes Catterall up a little bit because I think the fight was just from, like, nothing really happening in the first five rounds. It was kind of close still because those were razor-thin.
Yeah, and then it turned into, like, a panic rush.
Right. Then it was like from five on, we had two knockdowns and we had some moments. Ultimately, Jack Catterall gets the win. We will talk about what it means for the 140 picture, where he fits in there. 140 is interesting, but wasn't like the worst fight. I think it was a little bit better than I expected from the fifth round on. It caught some fire, but man, I just don't like the way Catterall fights. And Pro Gray, I think we saw the last of him at this level, at least. I don't know if he's talking about bare knuckle, but you know, it wasn't the worst fight, but it wasn't also like a barn burner.
No, it wasn't. It was not a high level chess match by any means. It left a lot to be desired, which a lot of Jack Catterall fights do, and Pro Gray lately especially, because he just doesn't throw punches. But in terms of what this fight was for me, like, listen, I don't know if you talked to anybody who knew anything, you knew Jack was going to win. Pro Gray just has not looked good in years. And this to me was the story. This whole fight was a story of Pro Gray exiting the sport. You know, he looked early on like he was out of sorts. He was trying to find his way, kind of having like, listen, this happened to me on one of my comebacks, like having an existential crisis, like, what am I doing here? Am I really supposed to be here? Do I really want to be here? Kind of thing. And then he wakes up because Jack starts so slow, he can let you get into a fight. So they get into it actually gets into the fight. And then progress starts like coming on a little bit. And then he just runs out of everything, runs out of gas, his legs give out, you know, he starts getting cracked with shots. He can't take the punches the same way he used to. Now we're on back-to-back fights where he got dropped pretty badly by two light punchers, Haney and now Jack Catterall. So yeah, it's just, and then at the end of the fight, I tip my hat to Regis being brutally honest, like he always is at the end of the fight, being like, hey man, let these young guys have it. I just, you know, I'll go to bare knuckle or something like this. This is not for me anymore. He's just a better man. I thought that was really cool on his part. Both guys, really cool guys, but the way they matched up was pretty much exactly how me and you said it was going to be, kind of an ugly, boring fight. The most exciting parts were the big knockdowns by Jack Catterall, because they were legit good knockdowns with nice, beautiful left hands. But other than that, yeah, I don't take too much of this away for Catterall. I look at it more like this is just Regis, you know, falling apart in front of our eyes.
Yeah, I'll go back. I'll start backwards from the points you just made, and we'll talk about Progre's career, because it's one of the more interesting careers that I'm not sure as a fighter you would want to emulate, but I'm sure if you get to the end of it. Yeah, but if you get to the end, like I'm talking about the road that he took. And I'm not sure you would sign up for that road, but I'm sure when looking back, a lot of fighters would take this career. Multiple-time champion, big-time fights, big-time money, signed with Matchroom on this three-fight deal, and which ended up, you know, looked like he was kind of stealing money towards the end with this Catterall fight and the Haney fight, not winning too many rounds in all that. But you start at the beginning where this guy was a really good prospect. Signed with DiBella Entertainment, which is a smaller promotion that doesn't have a television deal. So he's fighting on Showbox sporadically, and everyone's hearing about him, but he's not bursting onto the scene until he's about 25, 26. Go even further back from there, a guy that was his career had a lot of interruptions. He was had a move during Hurricane Katrina. He had a move to Texas. He had a start and stop numerous times before he finally got his career going. Doesn't have the promoter, like I said, finally gets those title shots and those World Boxing Super Series opportunities, comes up just short against Josh Taylor in 2019, which I thought was probably his peak, where I see a lot of revisionist history, once again, from fans. Like, he was always ass. He was always bad. Like, no, he wasn't always bad. Like, this guy was top of the division in 2019. Like, Josh Taylor in 2019 was pound for pound top five.
He beat really tough guys, and that version of Josh was really tough to beat.
Dude, that version of Josh Taylor, he was a world beater. Like, we're talking top five, consensus top five in 2019, Josh Taylor. And Regis took him to the bitter end, like, you know, life and death. So that's Regis Progre. And then from there, he goes on, and this is when it gets funky. This is when your career can take multiple different paths. He signs that deal with ProBellum, which ended up being like almost like a criminal outfit with Daniel Kinahan. Accepts a lot of money, fights on Triller. Takes, you know, fights once a year, is fighting Ivan Redcatchers of the world, is fighting Travis McKenna. These names that you just don't know and it just don't make sense for him. But he's
making good money.
Probably $2 million a fight. Probably clearing $1 million a fight to fight these guys, which is frustrating, but also just like, all right, man, do your thing and set yourself up. And then he finally gets back into the title picture with that Zepeda win, title shot, which is not really showing to be that good of a win because we've seen what Zepeda has gone on to do. Gets the Haney fight, gets absolutely just dominated. Has this fight, the Zorilla fight, looked horrible in that one too. And now this one looked somewhat okay, but is going to retire. That is an up and down, crazy career for Regis Progre. One that I believe a lot of fighters would sign up for in the end. But he was a great dude. Like, all in all, like even in defeat, his last fight, he gives it all up. And bare knuckle, I feel like, is a spot for a lot of these guys to go now, like a retirement tour. I don't know if he needs to do that because I know he's invested his money a lot. But interesting career for Regis.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, you know, with everything you're saying. Wouldn't be the path that I would like to take. But listen, he made money. He won some titles. But you couldn't script that. That's just
no.
You know, it's the exact opposite of what normally happens when you got a really good fighter. Normally, who misses every opportunity and just ends up without the bag. Regis is the opposite. You know, every opportunity seemed to fall his work out in his favor. Didn't stay super busy, but whatever. In this sport, if you don't have to stay busy and you can win titles and make money, that's probably better off. You're taking less damage. So, you know, yeah. But if that's the end of his boxing career, good for you, champ. And enjoy whatever is next.
Tip my cap to him. Over to Catterall, who has a lot left in the tank.
He's in his prime at this point.
Seemingly has a lot left. Doesn't really let it go. I think he's a fine fighter. I think he's a good dude. I think he's...
Unfortunately for the fans, he's got a long way to go.
Right? He's in the top 10. He's going to be in the top 10 for a while. Like, he's got those sustainable skills on defense. He does a wonderful job of slowing down the fight. He does a wonderful job of getting his opponent to fight at the pace that he wants them to fight at. He does have heavy hands because he does score knockdowns. Mm-hmm. But the thing with him is just like...
Yeah, it's sharpness. He's got a good left hand. It's really, you know, his jab is more of a disrupting jab, mm-hmm. and he uses that to land that left hand. He keeps it super, super tight. It's really hard to see. He's got good timing on it, and he's got this disrupting lead hand, really, that he uses kind of like block other guys' jabs more than actually jab himself, because he jabs from pretty far away at times, and he isn't great at closing the distance, but he's good at pulling away, keeping the weight on that back foot. And when he sees the opportunity, he gets that head offline, drops that left hand. It's hard to see. He's got no fat in the punch. It's just a technically very good punch. And he cracks guys solid, and they go down.
He wins rounds. He wins fights. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately the name of the game.
I don't know if he can win rounds over here, dude.
I know. I don't think
he's going to win rounds over here.
That's what I'm getting at.
You can't fight like that.
This guy is very good in his backyard, and he has a lot of fans in his backyard.
I should have went to England way more. I would have won a lot more fights.
they'd like that style. They'd like that style. My thing with him is he had a wounded duck in front of him. He had mm-hmm. Progre down in the ninth twice.
Progre's leg completely fell apart in the 11th round. Like you injuries.
Like you saw his legs just completely gone. Like he couldn't even stand up. Like when he threw that.
His ankle, his knee, his hip, everything. Everything was gone.
Regis said he had a knee injury heading in, and then he also just got hurt in that first knockdown. And then from the ninth on, you could visibly see like everything go on his legs. Like when he threw that crazy punch where he like spun and fell, he had a hard time getting like up and standing up on his own two legs.
Yeah, one of my friends asked me like, "Hey, how was the fight?" I'm like, "Well, you know, Regis lost. He got dropped twice, but he hit the canvas like six times on wild punches that he just missed."
Right. But my point, like, Catterall had him for the final 9, 10, 11, 12, three and a half rounds to close the show and get, like, an exclamation point. Like, I stopped Regis Progre, mm-hmm. you know, grab the mic. You know, he's still going to call out some of the Paros and the Hitchens and the Teofimos. But with a stoppage, that means a little bit more. But he just doesn't have that second gear. He doesn't have that killer instinct. Which he probably should, because when he gets in, he's a better front foot fighter than he thinks, or mm-hmm. he's a better front foot fighter than people give him credit for. I just wish he had a little bit more of that killer instinct in him to go for that stoppage.
Well, I think we saw it in this fight where when Regis did come on, and even the commentators were saying, like, you could see the panic in Jack. He doesn't like the pressure from guys who can punch. You know, one thing about Progre, he was a pretty good puncher. And he's still, you know, that's the last thing to go. And you can see the panic he was wearing it when Regis did come on a couple of those shots. Like you can see, he doesn't like that engagement. And the style that he has, like you said, slows everything down and he can lull you to sleep and just kind of work his jab from the outside and time some good left hands. He's willing to win a round by like an inch. Like he's okay doing that, which again, that's not going to work over here. It works over there. The judges are used to him. They're used to his style. And when he fights bigger name guys, not in his backyard, he's going to run into some problems.
So Eddie says that he'll get a title shot. He doesn't really have like a mandatory position, but they're going to figure out a way to get him in front of a title holder. And most likely route is this IBF route with Paro and Hitchens, who are fighting December 7th in San Juan. I could see Paro going to Manchester or nearby where this new arena where Catterall fought, because Catterall does sell tickets because those guys just love boxing, and that's awesome to see. So I can see that being the route. The 140-pound picture now, Chris, is very interesting. It was one of the best divisions just a couple months ago, but now it has a lot of different names in the picture. It has a lot of different promoters.
It got a facelift.
in a picture. It got a facelift, but not like the facelift you want. It's like the facelift where the girl.
This is an episode of Botched. No question about it.
It's a facelift where the guy or the girl looks a little like, whoa, you got some work done there. 140-pound picture. Teofimo Lopez is your WBO champion, holds the Venezuela as the WBC with that win over Pitbull. Liam Paro holds the IBF belt. Albert Puelo owns the WBA belt. I'm pretty sure Devin Haney has some recess belt, but he's one of the contenders if he wants to stay there. Jack Catterall. You got Richardson Hitchens. You got Matias in the mix, who's coming back next month. Jose Ramirez versus Barboza is a fight for a kind of loser, just goes
loser
to the
leaves
bottom
town.
Of the line. Loser leaves town. So that's 140 right now. One thing about this picture, Chris, with these champs, is all four of them are with different promoters. Teofimo Lopez with Top Rank, Venezuela with PBC, I believe. Liam Paro with Matchroom, Puelo, PBC. Oh, I guess Venezuela and Puelo could technically unify, but I think Venezuela is going the Pitbull 2 route. Teofimo's in litigation with Top Rank. Liam Paro is a good fighter, but not like a household name.
So you're saying 140 is in disarray.
Big time disarray. How do you look at this? Do you look at it as like, wow, parody, this is great, let's get some new names in here? Or do you look at it as, I want some stability. I want one guy, one clear a ruler of the division, and then all these others try to get to and unify.
I only want one guy if the guy really earns it. I want everybody to fight.
Who's the guy then?
There isn't, and you know that's why you have these. This is great when you can have opportunities like this where you have a bunch of names. 47 similar. You got a bunch of guys that anybody can take. Even 54. 54 is a much higher level. Everyone's good, but like, who is going to be the guy? But in 50, at 54, I feel like we can make the fights. 40 doesn't seem like these fights are going to happen anytime soon, which is the worst case scenario where you have multiple champions on different sides of the street and they have their own personal and professional issues going on. I don't see this weight class getting sorted out anytime soon.
What's the best fight at 140 that could be made between the champions?
I mean, if we're considering Haney in there, I think Devin and Tio is an awesome fight. One that would be big, really big. I think it would bring a lot of eyes. I think it would bring a lot of clarity to the weight class as well. Because for me, Tio's the best one in the weight class. I think talent-wise, I think profile-wise, he's the guy. Devin is still licking his wounds from the Ryan Garcia debacle. He needs to get back. But also, I need to see him at 140. I don't know if he's going to fight at 40 anymore. He had a lot of trouble making 40 last time. So it's kind of up in the air where Haney's going to be. But in terms of the best fight to make, I think both in terms of talent and profile, that's the one.
Yeah, Teofimo is says he's in litigation with Top Rank. I got to find this quote from Bob Arum. So Teofimo is he's the longest reigning champion.
That's funny. When I said that I was in litigation with my promoter came to me and said, "You don't not supposed to talk about this." I'm like, "I can talk about it the hell I want. The media is part of my weapon against you, bro. Stop. We got a bad contract. I can talk to whoever the hell I want."
Well, Aram's the one doing the talking. But Teofimo is the longest reigning champion at 140. He maybe is the most frustrating because he has all the talent in the world, but he can also look bad and he can also say crazy stuff. He's still
and lose. He can lose because he has lost.
He has won fights where people thought he has lost. People are just not – the fans are just not that high on Teofimo Lopez. Bob Arum, not that high on Teofimo Lopez, saying Teofimo sometimes acts like he has a screw loose. I like the kid, but I can't figure him out, and he makes no logical sense. He signed an extension with us for the first fight with Pedraza, Jose Pedraza. That didn't happen. Then when we did another fight with Sandor Martin, he signed the same extension. So it's there in black and white. I assume he showed the lawyer the first contract and not the second. Dealing with Teofimo is like dealing with Alice in Wonderland. That's the guy. Like, that's the guy we want to see active. That's the guy that could be the ruler of this division. But
I watched his fight life last night. I watched his fight life last night, the Teofimo one, where he's fought Josh Taylor. And you were all over those things, by the way. Great job. But yeah, that was a really good episode. Like, and you got to see so many sides of Tio in that. They actually kept the crazy down very low in that episode because he's a lot crazier person.
Was the Taylor week crazy? Yeah, Taylor week was crazy for him too.
Yeah, I mean, he was saying some crazy stuff, but like, I've been at those fight weeks. They're bananas. Like, that one was less crazy than most.
I would like to see Teofimo Venezuela. Venezuela with anyone is fun because I feel like he has a really nice style, Venezuela. He's got the profile. He just beat Pitbull. Liam Paro brings a pretty fun style.
Tough
fight. He's relatively unknown, but he's going to be fighting Hitchens. We'll see what happens with that. Paro's with Matchroom, so they're going to stay in that little lane. Like Paro versus Catterall. I mean, I think that's a lock for early next year. Puelo is, I think, fighting Gary Anton.
Well, unless if Hitchens beats Paro, then we'll see Hitchens and Catterall.
Yeah, exactly. Because both
first
guys,
defense.
Paro and Hitchens are both with Matchroom.
I think there's a good shot. I mean, Hitchens is a good shot to win that fight against Paro.
Yeah, he could do exactly what Hitchens has done in his career. He could just jab and move and box. And Paro is kind of like a. That's not reckless, but he's a puncher, and
he's pretty
chances.
Dynamic though. He's pretty dynamic as because if he wasn't a southpaw, I don't think he would be a problem for a lot of these guys. But that south dude fighting southpaws, and I can speak from you know being a fighter, people hate southpaws. they've really changed things up.
I'm a southpaw myself. I'm a lefty. People hate me.
Yeah.
What's going on? Yeah, I think they do. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with this 140-pound picture. It's interesting because just last year, you know, Teofimo was in it, Haney was in it, Ryan Garcia wasn't.
We were literally talking about it as one of the hottest divisions in the sport.
Right, guys have moved up.
We also had Matias at the time where he was the quote-unquote boogeyman. And everybody's like, oh, we got Matias. He's the guy. He's the one who's beat everybody. We got Teofimo Lopez. We got Haney. You know, we got Ryan Garcia. Like, it was a red-hot division.
Right. And now Ryan Garcia is flirting with, you know, 160, 168. Devin Haney could come back at 147. Teofimo's calling out.
And we got lightweights moving up and beating the champions. So there's that.
Teofimo's has Terrence Crawford on his mind. A lot of these guys, the other guys you just don't really know about. Matias is fighting next month on PPV.com. You can order that right with us.
See my brand? I'm branded, PPV.com. Boom.
There you go. Can Matias get back into it? I know he's a devastating puncher. Has the
fun style.
Fun style. Has the name of that. You know, people know him as that boogeyman. You know, a couple setbacks. Doesn't really have a promoter right now, but I feel like he can get himself back into this picture.
Absolutely. Especially the way the weight class is now. I mean, the landscape has changed so much. And he's got enough recognition. You know, the Puerto Rican fan base is a big deal, and having that behind him, if he gets a couple wins under his belt and he gets back in there and beats, you know, one of these higher level guys, absolutely. So he can get back in there.
Jose Ramirez is fighting Arnold Barboza.
Jose Ramirez, if he has anything left, he could take over.
I Ring Magazine has him really high rated.
I do too.
How?
I do too. Yeah.
I just don't know what to expect from him. It's been so long. I feel like his best days were 2019 when he was fighting Hooker and he was in there with some of the bigger names. Like, I always wanted to see Porgray and Ramirez. They never fought. That's a mythical matchup that we'll never get. But I just don't know about Ramirez. He should be able to handle Barboza. And then if one of these titles become vacant or one of them become, you know, title luminary, I can see Jose Ramirez get back in. You're pretty high on Ramirez.
Always happened. Yeah, I think he's Olympian. I wanted that fight after, because when he fought Hooker, I was the mandatory for Hooker. And then they unified and then Ramirez beat him. And then I was telling Top Rank, all right, I'll fight Ramirez. I'll fight him in Fresno. I don't care. But he had a defense against Postal, and then the pandemic hit. So I lost all my momentum and all my positioning.
Man.
So I never got my second title fight.
That pandemic just ruined
fucked my whole career. I lost so much of my prime.
It ruined everyone's lives in different ways,
yeah.
Or it upended people's lives in different ways. It's just wild. Like, that boxing just like came to a halt, and some fights were made. I mean, the Lomachenko and Teofimo fights.
Some careers are made and some are ruined.
Some careers are made, some are ruined, some are sidelined. Like, you know, even. It's crazy what that was all about. So that's the 140-pound picture. I wouldn't be so inclined. I don't think we're going to see a unification anytime soon. I'd like to see just some good fights at 140. We're going to see Paro and Hitchens. Puelo, I think, is going to end up on these PBC cards. Venezuela early next year is going to fight Pitbull again. And Teofimo Lopez, your guess is as good as mine on what that guy does next. We have no clue. But if Haney gets back into the mix, Catterall wants to get a title. Hitchens, I mean, there's some hungry names there. It's just not what it was like a couple months ago. Did you see this, Chris, with Tank Davis, Lamont Roach? Could be moving off of December 14th. Lance Pugmire, Dan Rafael, both reporting that there's a troubles with the venue. There was also some reports that Tank Roach could end up on Benavidez Morel as a very juicy doubleheader sometime in January in Las Vegas. Very fluid situation with Tank Davis.
If they end up on that card together, that's awesome. I think it's good for everybody. It's good for the fans. It really makes that pay-per-view purchase juicy because you got Benavidez and Morel, which is a great fight. But also Morel doesn't have the profile to really lead the pay-per-view. But so Benavidez and Morel is like a fight head fight. Yeah, we love that fight. But the crossover appeal is not great. And then also Tank and Roach is not a fight head fight. You know, like people who know the sport are like, eh, come on, you're fighting a guy, a blown up 30 pounder who didn't need to move up. You're just making him move up. But there's the appeal of Tank. So I think you take the appeal of Tank fighting, you take the appeal of David Benavidez fighting, the fact that Benavidez and Morel's a really good fight, makes the card worth a damn. It makes it worth coming, you know, pulling out your wallet and paying for a pay-per-view. I think it's a great move. And if they do anything else but that, that's a misstep.
Tank has said cap. He retweeted it, didn't delete it, because Tank is notorious for tweeting some crazy stuff and then deleting it right away. It's still up on his Twitter. He says cap to the doubleheader. So we could potentially still see this December 14th Tank.
Well, I heard that there was money issues. And if there's money issues, as in Tank's not getting enough money, there's no chance he's taking a double feature, because then he's definitely going to get paid a lot less.
And also there, like, if it takes this double feature, is he the co-main event? I know he said during fight week that he would be the co-main event next time. But people say anything on fight week.
I was going to say, what things said on fight week are taken with a grain of salt. Also, again, if there's money problems, there's no way he's taking the co-feature. Because then again, he's making less money.
He is one of the, you know, he's in that discussion for Face of Boxing, Tank Davis, and a lot of his detractors use it against him. A lot of his fans will say he is. Come on, look at the numbers he does. Look at the butts he puts, you know, in seats and all that. But, you know, him fighting as the co-main event to a Benavidez-Morel main event, because that's what it would be. I think Benavidez-Morel would be the main event on
it should be.
January 25th. Tank, I mean, ultimately doesn't really mean anything. That doesn't really mean that much, but it does mean a lot to these fighters. Like, you want to be the main event. Tank Davis is a
Oh, no, it means a lot,
fighter.
Dude. It means a whole lot to us.
I stand corrected.
It means a whole lot to us to be the main
to
event.
To the fans, I don't know. Like, it shouldn't stop an event from happening, but you never know when egos get in the way. Like, his Tank could say that on fight week. Don't you think he wants to have his own event? Like, this is a guy that he's like a top five ticket seller in the sport. Like, put Lamont, if they're going to go ahead with this Davis Roach fight, put it in the Washington, D.C. area where I think Tank is just set on fighting in Houston and they're having issues with the venue there. And he just wants the fight to happen in Houston, where everyone was excited in that area, the DMV area, because Roach is from there. Davis is from there. They have an amateur background. Like, there's not a lot of fights in the D.C. area. Maybe that could be a option, because that's where I feel like the fight belongs.
I mean, I said that from the very beginning. I mean, you got two guys from that area. Apparently, it would sell in Houston, too. I think you actually told me that. But
it will.
But I don't know, man. Also, making that a pay-per-view is mind-boggling.
That's just the business where the sport is at. I'm talking about, like, in terms of gate, where, you know, the fighters can make
But if it's going to sell if it's going to sell in Houston, then, you know, you pack a bunch of Mexicans on the undercard, yeah, it'll still sell.
And the undercard was supposed to be looking good. You know, Fulton versus Figueroa, too. They had a Charlo rumor out there. He's from Houston, and he has a huge fan base there still, a big support system there. And he might not have a support system outside of Houston right now, but he definitely has one there. So there is reasons why they want this to be in Houston. There are reasons why DC makes sense. There are reasons why a doubleheader in January makes sense, because that's just a really nice offering for fans. That doubleheader is awesome. And you can market Tank and Benavidez. They seem to have a nice relationship. They're a good friendship. Two knockout guys. We'll see. We're getting towards the end of the year where things are starting to move, shift around. And there's a lot of PBC pay-per-views being lined up for next year. The Spence Fundoro one.
So, guys, before the end of the year, make sure you get another job so you can pay for watching your favorite fighters fight, or just don't get your kids Christmas presents this year and just save up for pay-per-views next year.
There you go. Get your kid a PPV pay-per-view.
There you go.
Courtesy PPV.com.
That's a good gift, actually. That's a really good gift.
Give him like a little card. Here you go. Boom. You're set. And, or you could just keep it locked to the show where we do giveaways and we'll keep you locked and ready to go.
Locked and potentially loaded.
There you go. There is the latest news and notes. Not too many. We're going to end the show with some wonderful voicemails, Chris. We love when the fans get involved.
The listeners be listening.
Because we have some really good ones, and I'm going to get to them right now, pulling them up. Here we go. This one right here. Let's go.
What up, Danny, Chris? Hope all is well with you, gentlemen. This is Eric Suarez from Corona, Queens, New York. Longtime subscriber and listener of the show. Real quick, I just want to let you guys know that I'm a big fan, and I think y'all have taken the spot of Pound for Pound, best boxing podcast in the game. A spot that I personally think was previously held by Steve Kim and Mario Lopez on the 3 knockdown rule. However, just like in boxing, similar to when that young, promising, up-and-coming steps up and dethrones the champ, you guys did it. With youth on your side, activity, work rate, and content, plus the ability to grow, y'all took over. With all that being said, you guys know the hardcore boxing fans, it's a small community, and boxing's not really represented and covered as much as other sports, like football, basketball, and me being Dominican from New York, I'm always expected to be a rabid baseball fan, but boxing's my true love. So thank you guys for what you do. Keep up the good work. Keep doing your thing.
See, that wasn't no question there.
No question. I thought there was a question at the end, but no. Listen, I appreciate it. That was awesome.
Yeah, no question. I just wanted to fluff our egos a little bit. Let us know that we're the best pod in the world. Similar to a fighter, we've, you know, up and coming. We show activity. We show consistency, Chris.
And we're grassroots, bro. We're grassroots. We're coming from the ground up. We're out here selling tickets. Like we're working selling tickets. Very similar to my career, career arc, and my championship run. That's what we're doing here. We're looking to upset
What's
the champs.
Up, guys? Here we go. Huge fan of the show. Gino Hayes. I'm also over in Tallahassee. I had a quick question for y'all. Out of any rematches that we never got, but we always wanted, what's top of the list for you guys?
That is a great question.
That's a really good question.
Got me thinking. I had to give you a little bit of a heads up first. I say number one of all time is Hagler versus Leonard.
Yeah. Historically,
a fight that still debated to this day. A fight that there are hardcore sides to both arguments. There are people that say Leonard won. He stole those rounds. Come on, man. He outboxed him. Hagler came out. Why did Hagler come out southpaw? Orthodox. And then there are some, Hagler won that fight. Are you kidding me? And they never fought again because Marvin Hagler was so distraught and was so upset. He was never to be seen. He just went to Italy and lived his beautiful life over in Italy. So I think right there, if that right there is a fight that needed a rematch that we just never got because of the pride of Marvin Hagler.
Absolutely. I mean, that's going to be number one historically across the board. I was going to think about like working backwards, like recently. I think Haney Lomachenko is one that, because people are so divided on that one, that's a fight where it's like you want to see the rematch, but you also knew it was never going to happen.
Well, there are a lot of fights these days that are very controversial, and they are made more controversial because of social media.
Yeah,
and they live on, and they just never die because of Instagram and Twitter, and people still bringing up Lomachenko fight. And it's also a time where you're not going to see, you're less likely to see this rematch because guys think they have way better options out there. Like Devin Haney
they do.
Is not going to go back to Lomachenko.
That's one of those. That's one of those. Haney like got by him. He's like, all right, I'm gonna keep him in the rear view. But also, I mean, he moved up in weight, and Loma's a much smaller guy. But in the same kind of vicinity is Teofimo Lopez and Kambosos. Tio, that dude. Without that loss, we're talking about Teofimo top five pound for pound fighter. Like he's so talented. Jeez. But you cannot forget that night. And listen, we're never gonna forget that night. But if he does, if he were to rematch him and then blast him out. You'd be like, okay, it diminishes, you know, the negative effect of the first fight. Listen, the loss is still there, but it would do something.
Dude, that fight, we talked about doing this podcast for a while, a different type of podcast where we talk about what if, like what if this didn't happen? What if, like what are the domino effects? That night changed so much in the sport.
Yep.
If Teofimo wins that fight, he stays top five. He's not looked at as he's looked at now. Maybe he doesn't have this precipitous like downfall, whatever you want to say, like these crazy ups and downs. And if George Kambosos doesn't win that fight, he doesn't go on to make all this money. He doesn't go on to fight 24 rounds with Devin Haney. Think about that too. Devin Haney probably fights Teofimo.
You're looking at $10 million less in Kambosos' pocket.
I don't think any fans really care about that. I know George does. I mean, George is in Ferraris, and he's an amazing character, and he's one of the best clapbacks ever on Twitter. If you follow him, he's awesome. That's great for him. But just like the ramifications for the sport, because we were lining ourselves up for a Haney-Teofimo
mega fight.
And then you see Kambosos come in and win, and you see Haney lick his chops and go, yeah, I'll go to freaking Australia twice. And dominate you for 24 rounds. And that changed the trajectory of Devin Haney. I got Devin Haney fights with Lomachenko. I got Devin Haney to where he's at. It sprungboard him to, I wouldn't say superstardom, but like another tier of
not only notoriety, but also earning potential.
That night was nuts. And Kambosos, or Teofimo says, I will rematch Kambosos before my career
I don't think
is
so.
Over.
I mean, it would behoove Kambosos. I think that would be his next biggest possible payday because I don't think anybody wants to give him any more paydays.
He just somehow keeps getting paydays. I mean, great dude.
Well, now he's
Paro, maybe they were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he's just an opponent. He's a high paid opponent. I'm still thinking of this question because it's a fantastic one. Pernell Whitaker or Julio Cesar Chavez? First fight was a draw. They never fought again. Highly, highly disputed. And Pernell having that win on his record would be a big deal. Because I don't see how Chavez would be able to beat Pernell at that point.
But De La Hoya, he fought
De La Hoya Trinidad. De La Hoya Trinidad. How about that fight?
They never fought again, right?
No. That's an epic fight that was very, very close and is highly debated. That never happened again between two legitimate, absolute like generational superstars.
I get kind of confused because towards the end they all fought again, but like 7 years too late.
You know, and at 170 pounds. You know,
we
it's
don't
like,
want to see that. But yeah, De La Hoya Trinidad had all the makings. That fight was the fight of the millennium. They were
You had the controversy. You had them being total stars. Yeah.
It was huge money wise. Obviously, Pacquiao Mayweather will come to mind. I don't necessarily need to see that again because I think it plays out similar.
Exactly.
10 out of 10 times, I think it looks just like that. You know, Matt Pacquiao punching air, Floyd landing 50% of his power shots, casual fans being upset, and boxing fans saying, yeah, I mean, what did you think this was going to look like? Although I don't think it was that bad of a fight. That's one of my takes.
One of the first interviews I got after my fight with Pacquiao in Macau, they were like, well, how do you think he's going to do against Mayweather? I'm like, oh, he's going to lose. And they were like, what? And I'm like, oh, no, it's just Styles. And like, he's going to lose. Like I'm just telling you, now that I've been in the ring with him, especially like I couldn't take advantage of them, but I saw the holes and Floyd will. So
all right, here we go.
They were like really mad.
This is Brock from Ohio. Bit of a off the main question. Did you guys have any fight result when you were a kid that just devastated you? As an Ohio boy, Ray Mancini losing on my birthday to Livingstone Bramble in the rematch crushed me. That's it. Love the show. Would like to hear your response. Thanks.
Dude, that's a great question and such that's a hardcore question. Like, he's a hardcore.
Before you get it, before you
that's
get it
awesome.
Answer, Livingston Bramble Ray Mancini 2 was the first fight that ever used CompuBox.
Wow, look at that. Brings it right back around. I remember Livingston Bramble said that I believe he said that he was using voodoo to make Mancini more hittable.
that guy was crazy, out of his mind. And so was Ray Mancini to a certain
extent. Yeah, Ray was crazy too.
So, obviously for me, being a big Roy Jones fan growing up, Roy Jones versus Tarver.
Yeah.
I just wish he never went back down to 175, which he would have. In a perfect world, Roy Jones, after he beats Andy Ruiz, John Ruiz,
goes back and fights Antonio Tarver, squeaks by, and then just retires.
In perfect world, and
he's the best. He's the greatest fighter that's ever lived.
Ever. But he went on to fight 40 more times since then.
Yeah,
including in 2020 against Mike Tyson. And if you ask him today, he's not retired. Roy, in my mind, you did that. You retired and you sat on your millions, and you're still awesome, Roy. But
yeah, in that parallel universe. That's happening. There's a universe out there where Roy did exactly what we just said, and it's a different it's a whole different layout.
Man, what's some of yours?
Gotti Ward broke me. It was a great fight, but it was like oh my god, he's like, how are you losing to a journeyman? What are you doing?
But do you really think he like this is something
no. Ultimately it played out perfectly, but at that moment when it happened, I was there too. I was destroyed.
Well. Working with Lampley, he's cried now twice. He's cried numerous times sitting with him at those tables as we wait for interviews. But one story he's told me a handful of times, I'll never get tired of him telling me. I'll never be like, Jim, you know, you told me this like four times already. When he tells the story of the Gotti Ward, where after the fight, Gotti comes up to Jim and apologizes, like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, Pat Lynch with him as well, I'm so sorry. And Lampley goes, what are you sorry about? You didn't lose. Like, no one's going to look back and remember who won or lost this fight. And then Jim starts the waterworks. But that's not the case for you, Chris.
No.
Your hero lost.
Yeah. Yeah, that crushed me. I think I was in, like, 9th or 10th grade. I remember, like, the whole lead up to that fight because I knew I was going. I was, like, writing their records in my notebook, like, on that's pen awesome. And pad.
Did
and
you
like,
know
I was
it was going to be this that good?
I knew how tough Mickey was because Zab Judah said that was his toughest fight up until that point in his career. And I'm a huge Judah fan. Speaking of, another fight that broke my heart, Koshizu knocking out Zab Judah. That fight really upset me and my brother especially. That was a bad one.
I got one that's not as big, but like didn't hurt me because I was an adult. I was like 24, 25. I was a big Cotto guy. From New York, went to all of his fights at the Garden. When he came he beat big Cotto guy. I was a big Sergio Martinez guy.
Oh, and when Cotto destroyed Cotto. Him. Yeah. That was the week before I fought Burmanikov.
Yep. On a lesser level where I didn't want to see Sergio. I knew he was better than that, but I just knew he was going to get trounced in that fight.
Yeah, and he certainly did. Trying to think some. There's definitely some other ones.
Gotti was my guy growing up. So anytime watching him lose, like when Cotto, when God, I was at Gotti's last fight when he lost to Wilfredo Gomez.
Right. I remember Baldomir knocked him out. Gomez knocked him out. Some bad ones at the end. Every Roy Jones loss hurt me. Glenn Johnson when he knocked him out, that killed me. Tarver when he knocked him out, that killed me. Every Roy Jones loss. What's that?
Tarver is number one for me when he knocked out Roy.
Yeah, I mean it was so out of nowhere. It was like, he said he's like, got any more excuses, Roy?
Very badass from Tarver.
Tarver is a badass. So listen, at least he lost to a very very tough good guy. But that was too much for me. That was too much for my heart to take.
All right, next one.
Good question.
What's up, guys? Love the show. In 2025, will we finally get Wilder Joshua? Possibly in the States. Number two, will Gervonta Davis ever fight anybody but an Uber driver? And number three, will Algieri cut off that ridiculous mustache?
Well, number three is answered because I don't see the mustache.
No, but it can come back at any time. My facial hair grows fast.
Your facial hair is like an enigma. It's like every day it's changing. Like you'd be a great fugitive.
Probably grows so fast.
You could be on the run.
I bring it out all the time because it pisses everybody off. It's great.
The mustache was something else. To go back, his first question, Joshua Wilder.
I don't think so.
30% chance. Definitely not in the States.
I think there's a better chance of seeing Joshua Fury, which is.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie, that's what Eddie wants.
Yeah, I want that fight too. I mean, Joshua Wilder, like, I don't know, man. I don't know if I really want to see Wilder anymore.
Yeah, the more I get separated from that Wilder Zhang fight, that was his last one, right?
Yeah.
The more he's going to be out of the picture. He's not doing interviews. He's not being discussed.
I think the Wilder Parker fight was worse because he just didn't even try. Like, he had nothing. Yeah. Zhang at least, you know, blasted him out. Like, but Zhang punches like a mule. So
I think if we're gonna drum up Joshua and just forget about meritocracy, like they're gonna go for Joshua Fury. I don't think they're gonna waste Joshua's more of his fights or any more of his time with
any more of his chin. They're not gonna waste any more of his chin.
That too, or getting the public to care about Joshua again in a Wilder fight. I think they're. Things would have to go wrong for that to happen. And then I think Gervonta, taxi driver, yes, we've been over this. Like,
yeah, it was actually one of the questions we covered last episode.
He'll fight someone. Your favorite topic, Chris, here we go.
Hey, Dan and Chris, Will from Tallahassee. I was curious with the Paul Tyson fight coming up, because I'm still personally very torn on what I think of Jake Paul's involvement in the sport. Because on one hand, you know, a lot of my friends who know, like, oh, you love boxing will approach it as, you know, oh, you must hate, you know, that Jake Paul is doing all these fights to get all this attention. And I'm like, well, I don't hate it because it gets exposure for the sport. But then on the other hand, if I, you know, ask somebody if they watch boxing, they're like, yeah, I watch the Jake Paul fights. It's like, well, you know, you don't really, they're not super into the sport either. So I was just curious to know y'all's opinion on whether, you know, Jake Paul and the Paul brothers' involvement in boxing has done more harm or more good for the sport. Love the show. Thanks, y'all.
I personally think it's done more good for the sport because
I agree.
If you look at what he's done so far, like this guy is a promotion. This guy puts on club level fights with prospects. This guy has done a lot for women's boxing. His fights, you may not like them. That's fine. I also think him as a promoter, Jake Paul, is going to be his long lasting stance in boxing is going to be as a promoter.
Not stamp. That's going to be a stamp in the sport.
Yes. Thank you. It's going to be him as a promoter because the guy has people listen to what he has to say. And lastly, like he's a fan of the sport. Like him tweeting about like a Haney fight or him tweeting about the Better Be a Bivol fight. How is that bad? Like that, he's got like 30 million followers and he's talking about Better Be a Bivol. Like this, we should be like thankful that this guy is shedding some light on boxing. You might not like the fights and Tyson Paul is coming up really soon. And you know, there's people out there that don't like it. There's people out there that are jazzed up. There's people out there that are going to watch out of curiosity. But, you know, I think he's done a lot more good than bad. I think that's very clear because we're going on maybe like 5 years of him in the sport. And we're starting to see what he's really about in terms of the business side.
For the listener who broached that question, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name, what it was from the beginning. But I think your head's in the right place. Like everything you said is right. Like, yeah, like, I think about this and, you know, I think it's a good thing, you know, it's getting attention to the sport and that's good. And, you know, but people who say that they watch boxing, they only watch that. It's like, well, no, they're not true fans. All that's
they're
okay.
Jake Paul fans.
Yeah. They're Jake Paul fans. And which is fine. And you, you know, the listener, I think you just need to be able to open your mind and accept that, listen, he is a good thing for the sport. And it's okay for you as a real fan to accept that. Because anything that brings more eyes to the sport and brings more money into the pockets of actual fighters is a good thing. And yeah, I mean, Jake Paul he's a spectacle, but everything he's doing around his fights is actually really good. Giving these women opportunities to make money, to making, you know, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano again is a huge deal. Having a prospect card where you have this club level shows where these guys are getting exposure underneath the Jake Paul banner, it's a really good thing for the sport. And it all stems from exactly from what you said. Dan, is that he is a true fan of the sport. Jake watches boxing. Jake loves this sport. Jake puts in a lot of time and effort to be the best version of whatever he can be for the sport. And yeah, is he robbing a bunch of people? 100%. But guess what? That's what we all want to do as fighters. We want to get the bag. And he's doing it. But I think he's also spreading that bag out to a lot of other fighters and creating a lot of opportunity for a lot of guys coming up.
Nice,
and girls.
Nicely said. I agree. Have you seen Tyson lately? He's looking bigger and bigger.
Bigger?
Yeah, he's looking in shape. The videos are hard to gauge because they're just so quickly edited and like they're so quick. But he's looking way more in shape than he was when I saw him in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And which I'm not surprised because he's probably training harder. Like what I've heard from his side is that he's taking it very serious.
Taking very
fight.
No, I know, but taking.
He's taking the fight.
He's taking it very serious. He's taking.
Have you put any thought into like what this could actually look like? Like, do you like Tyson?
No.
Have you put thought into the idea of what it would look like, or what the reaction would be if Mike Tyson lands something on Jake Paul and like knocks him down? Yeah, you knocking him out would be probably one of the most viral moments ever.
Yeah,
because of where we're at in terms of social media. But Tyson knocking Jake Paul down or bum rushing him, have you just like thought about what that will look like and like the reaction that it's going to set off across the world?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be seen in 150 countries.
I still haven't wrapped my head around the fact that this is actually happening because I've been saying so for
my
so long.
Are booked.
I'm like
my
the fight's not happening. Booked. Fight's not happening. But like it's so close now. I was like, wow, it's actually going to happen.
November 15th, live on Netflix.
But I really have not. I have not thought about what it's going to look like. I've not thought about what's going to happen at all.
Will you jump out of your seat if Tyson has a moment?
I'm probably not even going to watch it.
you're going to watch, bro.
I'm probably not even going to watch it.
You're watching.
No, I think I'm actually working that night, so I won't even be watching it.
Just to go back to that fan's question, too, like, just look at the card. Like, the Tyson-Paul card is headlined by Tyson and Paul, obviously. But it's Serrano-Taylor. We have Ramos on the card. We have Bruce Carrington on the card. Mario Barrios on the card. Lucas Badi, who knocked out Ashton Silva.
Mm-hmm.
Corey Marksman, who fought on MVP. Shadeja Green. Like, these are a little bit of something for everyone. And there's some quote-unquote real fights on the card. So that just kind of shows you where MVP's head's at. You know, I work with MVP. I know what they're trying to achieve. Is they're trying to find that balance. Like they just want to say that, hey, we are capable of pulling off a Tyson Paul, but we're also capable of doing a club show in Orlando 6 times a year and build fighters, you know, have these guys fight for titles. So that's pretty cool. And that's kind of like taking a piece of both what's going on in the boxing world these days. Thank you for your questions, everybody. Thank you for your voicemails. As always, the voicemail number is always open, and it is always a way to get in touch with Chris. He'll answer the phone any time of day.
Yeah, it's me. Guys, it goes right. It's my personal line.
Number.
It's my personal line.
631-403-0859 if you want to get in touch with Chris Algieri directly. Enjoy your fight. Enjoy your time in Belfast. I think the next time we do this, you'll be in Belfast.
Yep.
We got some fights coming up this weekend. Oshaki Foster rematch with Robson Conceição. We'll draw up some more. I'm sure there'll be some craziness headlines coming our way. All right, Chris. Have a good one. Be good.
Thanks. And yo, Belfasters, get in my DMs. Tell me where to go.
Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Enter those DMs if you have a Belfast brewery or a pub for Chris Algieri. See you, everybody.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.